Theirs was a love which knew no bounds, a torrid passion that shocked the whole of humanity and parts of Lord Longford. And in that sweet, idyllic summer of 35, they passed away the balmy evenings locked in each other's arms beneath a sky of Prussian blue. Their lips met with all the tenderness of a pair of glass blowers. As eagerly they explored each other's bodies and planted Union Jacks in all the places no one had ever been before. And yet, how could it last? How could their romance blossom in a cruel, unfeeling world which condemned all liaison between crown and commoner? Tonight, there together on the beach, they neither knew nor cared, for they were head over heels in love and had been ever since they found the oil slick. Oh, how their passion raged! Oh, how tempestuous was the unrelenting, mad desire that burned within the...
Well, there I'm afraid we have to leave the controversial new drama series, Edward and Mr. Simpson. Something not quite so controversial.
We present the Hound of the Baskerville. For the second week running, owing to a massive cock-up by the BBC, who put the wrong tape on. Tape sponsor.
What the hell?
Well, famous
story.
We apologize for this massive cock-up. We are doing our best to proceed with the advertised program, but unfortunately, tonight's tape seems to have been incorrectly filed under Radio 4 Jingles. So, while our technician is racing to catch up the dust card, a word about another program later on tonight, the Eamon Andrews Disaster.
In tonight's Eamon Andrews Disaster, Eamon's special guests will be boring, extremely boring, tedious, paralytic, large-breasted, but on this show, still incredibly boring. Embarrassing. And tonight, live by satellite from the other end of Eamon's long line of chairs, a film star we're not going to name now, because if we did, nobody would bother to watch the show in a million years. Although we can tell you it's not Olivia Newton-John, because at Thames Television we have no qualms about lying. So remember, that's the Eamon Andrews Disaster, right here on ITV at its new peak hour slot of 4 million years B.C.
But now, back to tonight's programs, and we've had a special request from Mary Whitehouse not to broadcast this.
Yes, it's another edition of Blankety Blank, the BBC's special program for the hard of thinking. And here he is, the Irishman who makes Ian Paisley look stupid, Ian Paisley!
Hello there! Well, as I'm only here for the purpose of that last joke, let me now introduce you to the man whose hair never looks out of place, especially in a plastics factory. Your jack of all ceremonies, master of none. Terry, remember what happened to Nicholas Parsons?
Thank you, masochists everywhere. Well, as Dr. Paisley goes off to rinse his mouth out with Lake Windermere, let me say welcome to another Blankety Blank, the show people all over the country now watch religiously as a penance. Now, I'll just try and explain the show briefly to you. Drivel. Briefer than that, I can't be. Well, now, let's force ourselves to meet tonight's merry rabble. First of all, Dr. Reginald, who the hell booked these people? Professor of anatomy and also the world's leading authority on four-poster beds, back seats of cars, and other reproduction furniture.
Good evening, Terry.
And next we come to consultant, urologist, and specialist in kidney infections, cystitic abnormalities, and general prostate malfunctions, National Health Sex Change Surgeon, Dr. Henry Meat Cleaver.
Good evening, Terry.
Next to her, we have probably one of the country's best-loved researchers into bladder polyps and non-specific inflammations of the large intestine, Dr. Michael. Good evening, Terry.
Hello.
And he's joined by someone new to the panel. Yes, a man who needs no introduction. So, these are the panelists who are going to play Blankety Blank tonight, and may God have mercy on their souls. Well, now, let's meet and humiliate our two members of the public by swiveling them round on a silly revolving platform like a couple of germs on a microscope slide. And first of all, the gentleman, what's your name, sir?
McAllister. Elves teeth, not another one, McAllister. My parents were Catholic.
I see. I understand, then, McAllister. You see, you live on the outskirts of Robert Morley. And you work for the Eastern Gas Board, dusting cobwebs off the letters of complaint.
No.
And I gather you can trace your family all the way back to a light fusing at the VE Day celebration.
No.
And that you once fell asleep in Fiona Richmond's bed and got arrested for loitering in a public place.
No.
Fine. And our lady contestant, your name is?
Norman, no jokes about me, please.
I see. Right, well, earlier on, the young lady won the toss, so she went home. And you two were left to come on the show. Well, and we start with you, Norma. Here's the line we want you to complete. Here we go. When Rudolf Nureyev pulled his tights up too hard, he was suddenly caught on the blank.
Hop.
Caught on the hop. Yes, that sounds highly logical to me. So let's see what our panel of mad buffoons made of that one. When Rudolf Nureyev pulled his tights up too hard, he was suddenly caught on the blank. Well, now, Doctor, who the hell booked these people?
I put male reproductive organs.
Oh, God. Oh, very good, very good. Dr. Meatcleaver, what comical curio did you come up with?
Well, I had the same. Male sex organs.
I knew this would happen. I knew it would happen. Dr. Good Evening Terry, I'm sure you've got some whimsical piece of humor there on your card.
I don't see this as an occasion for humor, Mr. Wogan. I put gonads.
I want to die. Doctor needs no introduction.
Well, it seems to me that the force of the taut gusset on the tight would indeed cause some minor contusion in the pubic tissue, so I put gonads as well. But then, of course, there could also be an associated impairment of the higher internal vessels, so then I put vas deferens.
Fortunately, we do have cheeky cockney Lorraine Chase to get us out of trouble. Now then, Lorraine, I've no doubt you've got some highly hilarious... Oh, my God. How could you put a word like that on your card?
Isn't it right, then?
No, it's not right. And in any case, you don't spell it with an X at the end. Oh, God, please, can we cut all this?
Certainly. Instead, let's go over now to the New London Theatre, Drury Lane, for news of another programme.
Yes, here at the New London Theatre, Drury Lane, preparations are already well under par for tonight's scintillating Eamon Andrews disaster. Tonight, as the guests plug their books and the audience their ears, you'll be able to sit back and enjoy some of the most stimulating conversation since Harpo Marx was sent to Coventry by a group of Trappist monks. But don't take my word for it.
Well, this is BBC One.
And now, another edition of Watson and Crick at the BBC, a celebration of the two eminent Cambridge geneticists' successful years with BBC Light Entertainment, before they were lured away by evil, greasy lucre and nasty, decadent research fellowships to achieve worldwide fame for their discovery of the DNA spiral, when they could quite easily have taken a paper round to make ends meet like the rest of us at the BBC. Written by Master Gagsmith, Teddy Northern Expressions, Watson and Crick at the BBC. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight I'd like to isolate for you this organic molecular lettuce by the use of control amino acids.
It's in here, Sunbeam. I bought it.
Not now. I'm trying to read this chromatograph printout.
In this paper bag, I have bought it. The life story of that sexing change woman, Joyce McCarno.
It's McKinney. The other's a way of making a model.
I was close.
Now, put it away and help me arrange this nucleic acid helix.
Great book this is. All about Joyce McKinney.
Hardback?
She must have by now. It's only to be expected.
Will you give over? How can I ever plot the structural symmetry of this sugar phosphate chain with you looning round the lab, cracking gags all the while?
Knock out this is, Sunbeam. She's just put on the chastity belt.
What chastity belt?
It's like the stockbroker belt, only there's a lot more people trying to get into it.
You're determined to foul this project up, aren't you? It's always the same. Between you and me, there's an intellectual abyss.
What?
Abyss.
Oh, is he allowed to say abyss on this show?
That's it. I've had enough. This is where I leave the BBC.
And this is where we leave the BBC in order to bring you this.
No, it's the Eamon Andrews Show, and here he isn't, Eamon Andrews.
Hello there. Hello and welcome to the show, where lots of people sit in front of a long line of large, strange-shaped blocks of cork, which are moved around from week to week to make you think you're watching a different program. Sometimes we move the blocks of cork as well. And in tonight's edition, we'll be using the brand-new electronic Pozo de-embarrassment machine, which automatically edits out each embarrassing pause as it comes up. On then to my first guest, who is a bulldog clip. Oh, no, sorry. I'm looking in the wrong place. Michael Parkinson.
Hello. Now, Eamon, I think it's fair to say that you've become very well known to British audiences over the years for your various broadcasting work and appearances, but in particular for your very special ability to perspire heavily on television. Your credits are, in fact, endless. You've chaired panel games while sweating buckets, introduced regional news programs with your forehead streaming like Niagara Falls in the monsoon season. And now, of course, here you are hosting your own chat show where you regularly open up the glands before a host of international celebrities. And in fact, I see the fluids are really starting to flow at this very moment. Fine, well, thank you very much there, Eamon, and the salt tablets are on the table. Well, now, Eamon's next guest tonight is...
Excuse me, may I leave the room, please?
Certainly, Eamon. Eamon's next guest tonight is that world-famous natural history expert, a leading authority on the vocal cords of frogs and part-time voice therapist to Bonnie Tyler, David Attenborough.
Good evening, Eamon.
He'll be back in a minute. Now, Mr. Attenborough, tonight I understand you brought along one of the most dangerously lethal and poisonous animals in the world.
Yes, probably the most dangerously lethal and poisonous animal in the world.
And I believe you've in fact got a specimen in your pocket.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. Yes. Yes, Eamon, here we are. Just have a look at this. I think you'll find it's almost human.
Pretty Polly.
Fascinating. Tell me, how long did it take to teach a pair of tights to speak?
No. It wasn't my tights. It was this snake. Look.
Hiss.
Ah, yes. Now, let's see. This is presumably a female snake.
No, I just had two boiled eggs for breakfast. Ah! Hiss.
Yes, isn't he a panic? Actually, this sort of snake is normally only found in Malaysia.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. My natural habitat is next door to the Kuala Lumpur handbag and wallet factory.
Really? And what do you live on?
Tenterhooks. Ah! Hiss.
Don't do that in the ashtray.
Sorry. My wife left me, you know.
Oh, that's very sad. Why?
Well, it all started when I sent off for this Boy Scout book of knots. To try and make our marriage more interesting. Only she said I was depraved and perverted. Because she's like that, my wife. A good judge of character. So, in the end, she left me and ran off with a bicycle in a tube.
Well, I think you'd better go back into your box now.
Fascinating. Tell me, where on earth did you find such a strange and unusual-looking beast as this?
I've known him for years.
Truly incredible. Well, thank you very much there, David Attenborough. And I'm sorry, I should have asked you before.
Eric Pout of Croydon.
Ah, oh, that's better. Well, we'll be back in a couple of minutes with more thrills, spells, and surprises here on the Eamon Andrews disaster.
There will now be a short intermission.
Coming soon to this intermission. A film that has nothing at all to do with this.
Mr. Bunter, come in to sit down. Fellow governors, this is Mr. William Bunter.
Good afternoon.
Now then, Mr. Bunter, I think we're all pretty well clued up as to why you've been sent for here today.
Oh, crikey!
Sorry?
Nothing. Do carry on, please.
Well, if I may summarize the case...
Oh, law.
Nothing at all.
If I may summarize the case, when we took you on to teach here at Lowestoft County Grammar School for advanced games field sadism, it was primarily because of the excellent record set by your distinguished colleagues from Greyfriars.
Yes, indeed.
Bob Cherry made a fortune marketing a load of cherries... Fisher T. Fish made a fortune selling a load of fish. Johnny Bull made a fortune writing ITV sitcoms. And, of course, Frank Nugent and Harry Wharton made very good friends.
Yes, sir.
I also noticed, Mr. Bunter, that you won particular distinction at university by being the only Oxbridge graduate not given their own TV series when they left.
That's correct.
Fine. On then to your... little problem.
Oh, yummy.
Mr. Bunter, would you say there was anything wrong with the meals we serve in the canteen here?
Oh, law. Oh, crikey. Oh, crikey.
Yes, sir. I mean, no, sir. No, sir.
In that case, one is tempted to wonder why, since you were appointed assistant fat owl of the mathematics department, why you've been resorting to other sources for your supply of foodstuffs. I am referring, of course, to the boys.
I'm sorry, sir. I maintain my innocence to this day over the entire trivial and trifling affair.
Mr. Bunter, it is the opinion of this committee that there is nothing trivial or trifling about your eating Adams Minor of the second form during tipping.
This was never proved, sir.
Traces of his cap were found in your mouth afterwards.
Oh, crikey!
I have here a letter from a parent who claims you told the Colts' second 15 rugger team that smearing themselves with soft margarine and tying slices of bread around their chests was official practice in gym training. And that lashings of Branston pickle topped by globules of Daddy's tomato ketchup were the school's regular colours when playing away from home.
Snakes alive!
Quite frankly, Mr. Bunter, cannibalism among members of the teaching staff is something we cannot tolerate.
Is it against the rules, then?
It would hardly be in accordance with the rules, would it, Mr. Bunter, to grill the lower sixth applied studies set for breakfast, then follow it with a light lunch of O-level retake group kebabs?
It was coca, sir.
What?
It was coca, sir.
Everyone in the refectory was watching you, Mr. Bunter.
Yes, well, he looks a bit like me. We both have the same number of legs and things. Two legs and three things. It must have been Coker.
Mr. Bunter, we don't even have anyone here called Coker.
Oh, law.
This has gone far enough. Have you any idea how much you're costing this school in compensation claims, insurance, and hush money? Expense is phenomenal. Mr. Bunter, about £90,000 a week. I'm waiting for an answer, Mr. Bunter.
I'm expecting a postal order, sir.
What?
I'm expecting a postal order from my Aunt Judy.
Oh, that's all right, then.
You will let us know when it arrives, won't you?
Certainly, sir.
Right. Send the next one in.
Yes, sir.
Ah, come in. Now, you must be...
Cap'n Bly, sir.
Ah, yes. Now then, Mr. Captain Bly, about your approach to discipline here as games master, the thing is that...
Yes, coming to this intermission, a film nothing at all to do with what you've just heard. The epic motion picture, they said, could not be made, could not be made. So instead, they made a different one. In the 18th and 19th centuries, during Britain's rise as a colonial power, the civilizing influence spread throughout India, Africa, and Asia, but is still waiting for an entry permit to Australia. As the years went by, more and more white faces were to be seen among the black nations, usually just after the phone bill had arrived. But by the late 1800s, the empire had begun to decline faster than a sailor being offered a lift by Lionel Blair. And among the fiercest battles were those fought in the baking heat of the African plain, the Zulu Wars.
January the 22nd, 1873. The place, the British forces mission station at Rorke's Drift in the province of Natal. Overhead, the sun is so hot that the men building the bridge are working stripped to the waist. This gives them an undignified appearance but keeps their legs cool. Suddenly, a message arrives that 400,000 heavily armed Zulu warriors are preparing to attack, and the soldiers are ordered to mass themselves at once, although unfortunately some of them mishear the instructions. As they take up their positions behind the sandbags, the men nervously ask the captain if they will pull through, and solemnly he gives them his word. Help. Even at this moment, a few miles away across the barren hilltops, the native chieftains are gathering in the village for a meeting with the Zulu Council.
Now then, gentlemen, we come to the third item on the agenda. Chief Anduga Mabuka, I'm requesting planning permission for a multi-story car park, integrated shopping precinct, and two-tiered cantilever leisure center facilities adjoining the 657th mud hut on the left.
Oh, well now, I think that sounds an excellent suggestion. Truly a wonderful application of great insight there.
I see. Anyone else agree with Chief Mapulson? Very well, then. On to the next item. The introduction of Christianity. Several members, including Chief Ahuga Magura Wahua, Chief Ndinga Wahula Mabula Umagua Wua, Chief Ndinga Maninga Muninga Ahua Huga Wuga Malua, and Chief Mabuka Wuka Nagua Ahua Wua Duhua Gua Waunga Wahua, feel we should have a vicar. Because he is getting fed up with all the christenings being done by a warthog. All in favor? Thank you. On then to the main item of business, the war against the chuckles.
Hey, buzz, buzz, loady, 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 master. Oh, loady, loady, loady.
What is it, Rochester?
No, sir, it ain't good. No, sir, Massa Buena, sir. I think there's something you ought to know. Oh, lock of mercy, honey child. Lordy, lordy.
Not now, Rochester. We in the middle of a council of war. Go away.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
I say, don't you think you are a bit rude to him?
Rubbish. Our blacks are the happiest in the world. Now then, back to the war against the chuckles. Which doctor Nga pronounceable? What are your views?
Well, I think the situation looks very promising. There's 400,000 of us and only 153 of the chocos. That means we outnumber them by at least 2-1.
Exactly. This time we got the chocos right where we want them.
Death to the chocos.
Here, here. By the way, anyone want another piece of Milky Bar?
Don't you go beating you old Rochester. But I got, the baddest piece of news you ever done here. Just you take a little looky here, sir.
Take a look at what? If this is some sort of gift that you are getting up to... Oh, no. Oh, no, this is the end. How could they go and do such a thing to me?
Do what?
Oh, this is so embarrassing. I mean, oh, I don't know how to tell you this, gentlemen, but it seems that the magazine Men Only have published certain pictures.
Pictures? What sort of pictures?
Well, it was a few years ago now. I was young. I had quite a good body. And the money was attractive, so I posed for... Oh, well, you better look for yourself.
Let me see that. Men Only, special big totem issue. Undressed are nudist Mandingo.
Oh, God.
Hunky Zulu chief elect Kunta Kinte measures 42-36 and VAT not included. When this ape from the Cape rotates his raunchy rump to the dynamic drums of the war dance, see the happy headhunter's head for his heaving hide.
I don't believe this.
This is a major scandal.
You'll have to resign, Chief.
Yeah, Lenny, he ain't the only one who's going to have to resign. Master Big Witch, Dr. Bartman, sir. Oh, no, just look at this.
Oh, dear, what can the matter be, Lee? Bewitching witch doctor Mboko Uzula, seen here with his pert pygmy friend Peter, who just comes up to his expectations. Loves nothing better than the thwack of a shockbone spell shaker across his skirt's grass verge. Chimney turned out Mboko met Pygmy Peter last August.
No, don't do it anymore.
Well, if this isn't the most disgusting thing I ever heard, at least there's not one magazine with me in it.
No, sorry, boss. I make it 37. Just look here, using them all. Big bodies, buttocks, and Batsuzi.
Oh, no. Hey, how is in leather gear?
Oh, no, they can't.
King Solomon's mine, confessions of his young friend.
6 Maguliguli tribesmen disciplined in rubber.
Trevor MacDonald exposes.
Well, there we have to leave that intermission, I'm afraid, because we've only just got time left to read the closing credits. That is, providing BBC radio continuity don't suddenly cut us off before we've finished. The show you've been listening to starred Joe...